Fleeting circuses above the atmosphere of Venus. While sitting in my back room at the Uranian Platz apartment, looking straight at the ivory wall outside the window and hearing the kids playing in the playground, I concentrate my thoughts on how one can tell multiple stories simultaneously without having any sequential order. Why am I thinking about such a concrete matter on such a brilliant, sunny day? I should call Laura, walk to Engelbecken, and lay on the grass beside the water. But stories by their nature have linear iterations, and thus they take up time. And since they take up time, they have to be told in sequence. I remember a painting by Jan van Eyck, the one with two people in the ceremony of a marriage or some unification. The painting is like a field with many landmarks, each of the landmarks pointing to a suspended, frozen story. These frozen stories don't seem to converge at one point, but rather stay coexisting and interrelating, like looking a section view of underground mole nests. Painting might be a good vehicle for me. I hurry myself to cycle to the Gemälde Gallery at Potsdamer Platz. I pass by Mises' glass box, saying hello to it in my mind. I walk into the Culture Forum and go directly to the deserted long corridors of the painting gallery. It's completely still and cool, despite the warmth and life outside in the city. I walk toward a painting, not too big, looking Flemish or Dutch, a figure seemingly in her domestic interior. I try to look at it closely and carefully. The surface of the painting, glazing, an overall presence of air and humidity in the painting. On a muggy summer evening stroll along the riverbank, a young man saw the most beautiful, elegant woman standing alone, wearing a brilliant red peony patterned kimono with an exquisite pearl hairpin above her ear. He was struck by her stunning allure. He approached her nervously and asked her name. "Oyoshi," she answered with her plumb voice. She invited him and entertained him with different stories of foreign places. He felt as if he was sucked into a daze, completely losing his sense of time and place. As the morning star appeared above the horizon, Oyoshi told the young man, "I must leave now." With these words, she turned into a female fox, bowed to him deeply, and jumped away into the bushes. The painting hanging on the wall at the left back side of the painting. With the new discovered alchemy of transforming clay powder into white gold, Meissen Menagerie was set up in the Singer Palace. Exotic animals, such as elephants, lions, tigers, monkeys, rhinos, foxes, parrots, flamingos, and many more pose elegantly on the pedestals, all glazed pure white and completely still, reflecting the glare of the chandeliers on the palace ceilings. Augustus Stark and his family would meander through the safari with their ornate long dresses sweeping the floor. The antique figure on the desk at the right front-hand side of the painting. The sisters of the Lomonosov foxes escaped discreetly from the abandoned, much-destroyed uranium bomb palace in St. Petersburg and made their way to Germany. They are tinted, unlike the Meissen white fox. They are raised in the Russian royal court, and they have been part of countless glamorous balls and parties in the palace. They have learned the skill of disguise as well. The telescope also on the desk at the right front-hand side of the painting. One of the many accomplishments Mikhail Lomonosov made in science and art was the discovery of the atmosphere of Venus. Venus appears the brightest in the sky, after the sun and the moon. Thus, it is also called Lucifer, light-bearer, or simply golden star. It is also the only planet referred to femininely in the solar system. The very dense, high-pressure, and high-temperature atmosphere of Venus could be the strong aura of a brilliant, bewitching woman, with its substances being exceptional talent, sensitivity, intelligence, charisma, and magnanimity, which add up to compelling beauty, a vigorous presence pulling people in, folding them into her atmosphere. The figure in the middle of the painting. On her wedding day, Miss Margarita made a commitment to herself and to the nation that she would become the first queen of Italy. The white embroidered wedding garment, a pair of long silk gloves, and the intricate patterned lace veiling her face and shoulders transformed her into an elegant bride. But mostly, the magnificent diamond, ruby, and pearl jewels she wore, partially as presents from her soon-to-be father-in-law, Victor Emmanuel II, and partially from her mother, Princess Elizabeth of Saxony, gave her a sublime weight as the future queen. She stood with her husband, Umberto I, on the balcony of the Palazzo Reale, waving to the citizens who came to celebrate their wedding. She took her role closer. She sat next to Umberto I in the horse carriage. Going through the wedding march in Turin, she took her role even closer. Her transformation as the queen was symbolized with her obsession with pearls. Italian people called her the Queen of Pearls with admiration. This appellation was not merely because she wore many chains of pearl necklaces and big drop earrings, but because of her delightful presence, which made people adore her, long for her, and fall in love with her. Her beauty and presence helped the young country, Italy, to be brought as one and united. The shadow of a figure suggesting the presence of the painter at the left front-hand side of the painting. In his petit atelier in Paris, with disco music and pornographic images pinned on the wall, Mr. Pearl continues to make corsets for special people and special occasions. The corsets he creates are said to be a permanent embrace on the body, which makes the body more palpably present through its presence. The presence of the outside viewer for whom the painting exists. Margot sits in her sky garden with Romulus on her lap. The last bit of sun casts the long shadows of her succulents and the evening star rises. She's a pearl and a child of light.